Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Monday, June 21st, from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I am joined by Sheridan Memorial Hospital Director of Patient Experience, Kelly Lieb, and Trauma Coordinator, Tony Schoonover. Did I say that name right?
You did.
Fantastic. Good morning and welcome to the show, ladies.
Good morning, Floyd.
So I'm going to start with you. Kelly, you've been on the show a few times, but people still getting to know you. Where are you from originally?
Thanks, Floyd. I am from the Emerald City of Sheridan, Wyoming.
Fantastic. Lifelong.
Lifelong.
Lifelong. How about you, Tony?
I'm actually originally from Sheridan, but my family moved around a lot and always seemed to end up back here.
Yeah. It's a home base.
Yep.
Right? It's kind of like with the entire state of Wyoming. I've been all over the state. I've lived in just about all four corners. And some reason, you know, I've tried to move out of state once or twice. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Just can't. We live in a beautiful place. Always come back.
I compare everything else to her. You know, everywhere I go, it doesn't have this, and this state doesn't have that, and there's too many people, I'm going home. Now, when we look at careers in healthcare, I always end up asking folks how we got here, because it is a commitment, and it's a devotion to care for others. Tony, what led you here?
So I actually took a first aid course in high school, and I really liked it. It was very interesting to me. When I was younger, probably eighth grade, my mom got really sick and I kind of stepped up and took care of her. And so ever since then, I've had a passion for caring for others. So that's what started it. And then I took a CNA course and just pursued nursing from there.
Wow. So is what about it really attracted? Is it the caring for others? Is it the procedure?
I think I do enjoy caring for others. I really like the excitement of where I'm at right now in the emergency room. I think it's just an exciting environment. I worked in Phoenix for a while, so that was very exciting there. I just love, yeah, trauma.
not the love of trauma, but the adrenaline rush.
Yes.
Of, I got to get on the game. I got to get moving to help this person.
Yeah.
Kelly, what led you here?
Oh, wow. Looking back, I was always in science and math classes, and then also involved with a lot of people. I think I've always been a people person, caring for others. And at the end of the day, when I followed physicians or followed PAs in high school, and then into college, worked in an emergency department also, I think I knew that that was my passion. Overall, I think caring for people is what's so somewhat purpose-driven and satisfying at the end of the day. Working with teams in these environments that can be especially the emergency department, can be somewhat challenging in every way from the decisions we make, but also what the families are going through.
Yeah,
it's great to be a part of a family's experience and perception when they're going through the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
And for that, I think that's what continues to provide value in the work that we do.
Being the hand on the shoulder, yeah, or, you know, the words of comfort. And actually knowing, you know, what's going on with their loved one or even themselves, just having someone. Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. It's also really neat to see what we as a medical team at Memorial can do in those situations and bring families out of that really difficult time.
Yeah.
Whether that's a good outcome or not, depending on the case, but, you know, shouldering that also as a team and being there for the patient family.
And you really are there for some of the, toughest times for individuals.
Yeah, it's quite an honor.
Yeah. Now, when we look at a physician assistant and a registered nurse, Tony, what you do is very different from what Kelly does right now on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. But you're a registered nurse and you're a physician's assistant. When we look at the differences of what that is, what are they?
Well, I look at physician assistant very similar to the doctor. Like, they are the provider. They are looking at the bigger picture. And as the nurse, like, we kind of implement whatever they want. But they, like I said, very similar to the physician. My husband's a PA as well, so I may be a little biased. I love our physician assistants. I think that they go to that next level of caring, kind of like the nurses. Like, we are right there at bedside, you know, doing all the things that they put for us to do, all the interventions. But I do think that they take that extra time and are with the patient as well. So they know all the things. They know how to care for the patient. They can diagnose and treat them just like the physician can. But I really enjoy working closely with them.
Kelly, when it comes to a physician's assistant, we think about people, person, nurse. The individual who's going to come in and figure everything out, doctor, right? So is the physician's assistant kind of that middle ground?
There is somewhat of a middle ground, yeah. I like to think of physician assistants as extenders of physician-level care. High-level critical care where a physician needs to be involved. Certainly, yeah. PAs don't want to take that position nor scope of any kind, right? So we can really see a lot of the bread and butter. We can see a lot of challenging cases, too, with physician involvement. At the end of the day, your physicians are surgeons. They are physicians in the ED, leading practices across the community in primary care, internal medicine, pediatrics, and PAs and or nurse practitioners can work alongside physicians to extend the care so that we can have access for our patients and also excellent care as a team.
Yeah.
I also think from Tony's perspective, nursing is eyes and ears. They are your first tap into what's happening with the patient, and without nursing, it really doesn't work. So yeah. I think passing from that nursing eye to a physician assistant and or NP, nurse practitioner, and or a physician, overall, we have really great practices in place that are safe practices with having all levels of care. It's often that patients think that I or perceive that I'm a physician. So I try really hard to explain that I'm a PA and which physician I'm working with that day.
And it's not like doctors don't care. I've gotten an opportunity to sit down and speak with a lot of them. But there are certain things where they're like, you know, I've got to go work this problem out. I got to go solve this. Nurse, would you please take care of this individual? Make sure that they're okay.
Yeah.
In another scope, you could be, you know, the doctor uses the big words. And then the nurse is like, okay,
let me explain.
What he's saying is this, or what she's saying is this. And you know, mm-hmm. kind of explain it to people like me who I don't get the big words. You know? So absolutely vital in patient care itself. You know, I really feel that the nurse is the one there with the hand on the shoulder. And the physician assistant is just a level higher than that. When it comes to responsibilities. Kelly, when we look at the role of director of patient experience at Sheridan Memorial Hospital, though, what does that entail on a daily basis?
Sure. I clinically work in the emergency department and or now I'm phasing into the pediatric role as a PA. So that will be really great to be over at Northeast Wyoming Pediatrics, but the other half of my work, that's my clinical time, and I hope to bring that perspective into the administrative role that I carry, which is the director of patient experience. It's probably some of my favorite work I've done in my short career of almost 20 years. But I,
short career.
in healthcare, yeah. But I do think that what patient experience in that role is currently at Memorial is to improve that perception and not only the perception, but that each touch point at the hospital, every single nurse, someone who answers the phone, what that experience is when you come into our buildings for access to care and the physical spaces around you, what that perception is for the patient and the courtesy and respect they receive along their journey of care.
When you're experiencing something that affects your healthcare, especially maybe some of the long-term stuff, the slightest interaction is not slight at all.
That's exactly what we want to teach. And our teams are learning that across the organization. We're finding that I have a small team of myself and two others. And what we do there is orchestrate how each of those tiniest, slightest touch points can be perceived to the patient during maybe their greatest hour of need.
Yeah.
Patients come up and their families come to the hospital for care during difficult times and during happy times. And when we can be a partner in that care through the slightest, smallest interaction, I think that we are providing them the care that they need. Sure, we want them to trust us with care, and we want to provide quality and safe care at every level, physician-led care, great nursing interactions. We want patients to know that when they come up to Memorial, they are very well cared for. But in that, it's not just how we care for them, but what they remember about that experience.
And being able to walk outside, you know, after everything's done, and then you say, they really care about me. Mm-hmm. They, you know, from the time I enter to the time I leave, I felt cared for, and not just cared for, paid attention to. That's one thing that I think I hear a lot of people talk about when they talk about bad experiences at other places. You know, I feel like they didn't listen. I told them what was going on, and I feel like they ignored me, mm-hmm. you know, and that is so damaging to an individual. But if I feel heard, wow. Mm. I mean, it really does make a world of difference. How did you come to actually serve as the director of patient experience? Was there like an opening, or someone said, you know what, you got it, I want it?
You know, over the years, patient experience has fallen into a couple of different areas historically at Shared Memorial. And just a little background for you. At one point, it was service excellence or culture of kindness up at the hospital. It's also been where we look at patient satisfaction scores, or what we call grievances or complaints, through our patient advocacy team. And that had been seen through the quality department. So it was kind of this marketing led and then a quality department led, and how that interacted. Mike McCafferty and I had multiple conversations around what that looks like and how we can lead a path forward in five-star patient experience and what that really means. And so we sat down and talked about it. We discussed who would be best for that role. Ultimately, I applied for it and really wanted to share in that that great work and the growth of patient experience. What we've found in patient experience is that it can improve outcomes. Just exactly how you said, when you feel heard, you have that trust, regardless of if you've received quality care or not. You remember that, mm-hmm. and you come back, and then you continue to be open with your care providers if you feel you can come here in a safe place and do that, at which point outcomes are improved across the board. So you can get better because of a better experience.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal, right? So what we really are, and back to your question, is that I wanted to be a part of that work. I found that after many years as a physician assistant, I wanted to be a part of that macro level of improvement for the community. And my hope is that that is something that our teams are taking part in with us. And I can see that. I really can.
And what a discussion that would have been, you know, between McCafferty and yourself. Because that's a broad net to be throwing out there, you know, when it comes to patient care and satisfaction. And let's make sure that we're touching all the cornerstones here as we go through this. Well, there's a lot of stones out there in that field. I mean, that is pretty broad. From the time I walk in to the time I walk out, everything
and
counts as patient experience.
Yeah, everything afterwards too, right? Your post-op care, how did you receive your prescriptions? What was your prior authorization process like, right? How was it when you needed to check in and there was a line, right? Mm. Did you feel heard? Were you treated uniquely?
Yeah.
As a unique person. So there's a lot. Yeah.
There was a lot.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of corners.
Yeah,
a lot of stones. Yeah.
That discussion, I'm sure, probably went on for quite a while. And, you know, McCafferty is a pretty smart guy. I'm sure he sat there looking at you going, why am I looking for somebody else when she's the one bringing up all the good points? Now,
thanks, Floyd.
how do you define a positive patient experience at Shared and Memorial Hospital? I mean, is there like a set definition? Is it more of a feeling? Is there
something? Yeah, set definition, and really, you can really interpret this how you want to. But it's the sum of all interactions, really put out by a place in their culture, right? Mm. So Shared Memorial's culture and our sum of all interactions, that is how patients perceive their journey of care. So we feel that it's, like you say, the slightest interaction, the smallest touch, an eye, right? Mm-hmm. You come into the department and someone looks at you, say, I'll be right with you instead of ignoring you, mm-hmm. right? It is a place that people can come because they trust and they know that they're going to be okay when they come there and every interaction in between.
Wow. And I mean, that spans everybody.
Everybody.
In the hospital.
Everybody. We talk at our new employee orientation that every single person is involved in patient experience. And if you ask me about the strategic priorities, I always tell the new teams that it's the most important one of the four, patient experience. Mm-hmm. When we can bring in a great patient experience and we have that empathy and desire to do well as a provider or a nurse or a phlebotomist or an MA or a CNA, if we have that desire to do well, then we are meticulous about our care, which can then improve safe and quality outcomes.
And it's that idea. We all know that you're busy. You know what I mean? I know the physician's assistant is busy. I know the nurse is busy. I know the doctor's busy. But they made time for me. Mm-hmm. They made time to check in with me. And that makes you feel cared for, you know. And a lot of people talk about when they talk about going throughout their day, boy, it was improved because somebody said hi or good morning or held the door. Mm-hmm. And that made all the difference for a day. If you're going through either a traumatic experience or long-term, you know, disease that you're trying to battle, you've already got the cards stacked against you for having a good day. And having somebody actually acknowledge you, say hi, actually take a moment, how the kids, wow, that could make a world of difference. And as you said, that's tangible. We can actually see that.
We can do those things. They're small actions, that little connection.
And it's those that actually just make a world of difference. Have there been any specific changes implemented recently that really work to improve patient satisfaction or patient care?
Yeah, I think what's really neat right now, Floyd, is watching our teams work. So we're, rather than telling our teams, hey, this is what you have to do. You have to check this box. Here's a script you have to follow. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. We've learned that does not work. So what we're working through now, and it's really incredible to see, is our frontline teams working with their management around their ideas for their department, right? It's specific to each department. How patients go through a process or their journey of care at internal medicine is completely different than it, we'll say, addiction medicine, right? And so what we're asking frontline teams to do is be a part of what they feel and they see is a challenge. And then we look at metrics and we say, hey, in these behaviors and how you lead in that change of behavior, we should see these changes. And then overall, what we've started to see is an improvement across the board. So really starting at the micro level with our teams up front. And they do. Wow. They know their process is best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are really looking at that monthly and bringing in teams to report to our patient experience council and board. And so each month they get to report and they get to share and they get to be proud. And it's really neat to see the engagement. And so what I would say is to answer your question is it's been phenomenal to watch the frontline teams choose the work that ultimately impacts the patients.
The boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I also think that there's this point in process. It's like this little, I don't know, pebble in your shoe, right? And so if it keeps the nurse or it keeps the physician from the bedside, let's say, because of some little process, it's a little thing that I just can't get in the room because the electronic medical record or something about waiting for labs or whatever it is that I can't get in the room to be at the bedside, we want to know what that process is so that we can take that pebble out of the shoe and get the nurse and the physician or whoever, the provider, at the bedside, get the phlebotomist in the room sooner, get the lab ticking quicker. Because at the end of the day, all of those processes impact the patient experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we like to know what the pebble in the shoe is so we can fix the process.
And I love that. And I love the way that you address that. One thing that I talk with a lot of people about are the processes. Every job has processes. And understanding those processes and getting them down to the point where it's like second nature. I come in, I do A, B, C, and D. Once you have that down, now find the inefficiencies within that and start to improve on those. Where can you save 30 seconds? Where can you save a minute? As opposed to time, you guys are looking at how can I make this better for the patient? where can I remove this or add that to put a smile on that face or to make that person feel cared for?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Pretty neat work. And I'll tell you, it's improved engagement for our team members too. Yeah. They have a better day as well.
Kelly, when that first started, when you guys really sat down and started going through this, was there a lot of things like that where you were like, there's a lot of pebbles in this shoe. Let's go ahead and start. You know what I mean? Was there a lot and then you've slowly kind of worked it? Or
I think we've learned. We've learned that across departments there were similar pebbles. But then in departments also, there was something that was distinct and different. And so it's been really neat to see the teams come together and say, you're experiencing that also? Hey, we could make this better.
Yeah.
And then across the board, it improves. So it's really exponential.
Wow.
It's been fun.
How fun is that? Okay. I do have to take a quick commercial break, but when I come back, I'm going to ask Tony what her main responsibilities are as a trauma coordinator at Sheridan Memorial Hospital. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Another great summer event is coming up soon, the Sheridan County Fair.
Fair and livestock exhibitions are the foundation for agricultural promotion and a time to remind everyone of the key role that agriculture plays in our local economy and daily lives. It provides opportunities for youth and adult education.
The First Federal Bank and Trust family would like to extend congratulations to all the youth who worked so hard all year long to be able to show at the County Fair. Community is the heart of First Federal.
First Federal Bank and Trust, true community banking, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Taylor, front of house manager at Fraggletons. You know, every day on Main Street brings new faces and familiar friends through our doors, and each one deserves something special. At Fraggletons, it's not just about the food, it's about the feeling. Our team is here to make sure every bite, every sip, and every moment feels just right. Whether you're celebrating a big day or just enjoying the little things, we'd love to be a part of it. It's not just about the food, it's about the feeling. Book your table now at Fraggletons.com.
Get tuned up this summer. Make sure your vehicle's running safely and smoothly with the auto experts at Midas. Make those car care dollars go farther with the summer repair specials at Midas. Save up to $100 on popular tire brands like Cooper, Goodyear, and BFG. Save $150 on shocks and struts. Brakes save $50. Starters and alternatives save $20 on that too. From bumper to bumper, Midas has you covered. One stop, total car care. Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan.
Summer is here and the water is clear. Time to fish your bass off for another great year. Rod in your hand, feet in the sand, sun on your shoulders, your catch looking so grand. Snap a photo of your fish, then head online.
To SheridanMedia.com for prizes so fine. Win $300 from Connect Home Center and $300 more. From Century 21 BHJ, now that is a score. Enter on the contest page before Labor Day. But why wait around? Cast your entry today.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting. With us this morning, Sheridan Memorial Hospital Director of Patient Experience, Kelly Lieb, and Trauma Coordinator, Tony Schoonover. Now, before I took a break, I promised you we would ask Tony what her main responsibilities are as the Trauma Coordinator at Sheridan Memorial Hospital. This has got to be an exciting job, my friend. What do you do on a day-to-day?
It might sound a little more exciting than it actually is. So there's lots of roles within my trauma coordinator title. I think the main role that drives everything else is screening all the patients that come through the ER. So anyone with an injury, I go through their chart and make sure that they were provided a certain standard of care, that certain measures that we follow were met, that, you know, we did all the right things. So anyone from a finger laceration to someone in a motorcycle accident that had to be flown out. So I'm screening all those charts, and that kind of drives my trauma education and injury prevention, promotion, and community outreach, and even performance improvement projects.
And you know, when people come in there to the ER, it's usually kind of a bad situation to begin with. You know, you don't go in there for little things too much. You go in there for the bigger things, the trauma.
Yeah.
I'm not having a good day from the moment I walk in. So when you look at that, how do you, I mean, are there certain stages, are there certain procedures where you're like, you know what, we're going to not just calm this person down, we're going to improve this situation. Is that even taken into account? Or is it more about, let's get them stitched up and the bleeding stopped?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, life-saving measures first. I think it just varies with the patient, but we do have certain things to follow no matter what they're coming in for. And that's the purpose of our trauma program. So this certain standard of care for every patient, regardless of their injury or why they're here, we want to provide them a certain level of care. So for like a trauma activation, we're going to call radiology, respiratory lab, all these people. We're going to have the surgeon come in if it's a more critical patient. So following that every time with every patient, obviously it's unique to their injury or why they're there, but that's kind of the standard that I try to uphold, that we're following all those criteria and measures and making sure that we met everything we needed to and that they got the best care.
So you work very closely with Kelly then?
Yes, and the physicians.
Yeah. Now, how did you end up in this position? I mean, because you're a trauma nurse, and somebody walked up and said, I want you to make sure that their experience was not just satisfactory, but great.
Well, I'm not so sure I was the best candidate. my husband and I moved back to Wyoming from a big city, so Phoenix, Arizona, and I worked in an ER there. I loved, like I mentioned before, I just love that critical care aspect. I love trauma, and it's not like I love to see people hurt, obviously. It's caring for them and making them better and seeing the improved outcome. That's exciting. So I saw the title trauma coordinator. I was like, trauma, that sounds so fun. Like, why not? I'll just apply for fun. And it actually ended up working out, and I've been in this role for 3 years. There's so many things that go into it. I think that sometimes my nurses and doctors think that I'm just like, you got to do this, you need to remember to do this, or yeah, sending them emails, you forgot to do this. But there's so much that goes into it. And it's so important that we're providing the best care and maintaining that standard of care for all our patients.
And it's pretty amazing. You know, you ended up doing something completely different, actually, than what you were doing.
Yes.
I mean, are there still opportunities where you step in, or is that kind of
I pick up, so I'm PRN in the emergency room, and I pick up shifts as I can. A big part of taking this role was making my own hours and working. I drop my kids off at school, I pick them up. If they're sick, I'm home with them. So that's important to me.
Yeah.
I love bedside nursing. I miss it. I miss the action. I joke with everybody when I'm on the floor. I'm like, oh, I'm a real nurse today. But it's the most important thing to be there for my family. And this job gives me that opportunity. So I still get to go play, and that I enjoy. It's the best of both worlds, I feel like.
I knew I always got along with every single one of our medics. So I understand the draw to the entire aspect, where it's exciting.
Yeah.
There's adrenaline involved in this.
Definitely.
And getting a move on and doing the right thing at the right time could mean life or death.
Absolutely.
So I absolutely understand the draw. Now, Sheridan Memorial Hospital recently participated in Third Thursday. Why did the hospital perform this outreach?
I think community outreach is so important. It's important for us to engage with our community and remind them that we are just like them. We're human just like them. They can trust us. I think for us to be more approachable, it's a good way to get involved in the community. For me personally, promoting injury prevention and safety is key. And that's actually my favorite part of the trauma coordinator role, getting out there and engaging with the community. I really enjoy that.
So is this kind of like a preventative medicine type of deal, where you're looking at a matrix of mitigation, where here's the risk. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to go ahead and we're going to mitigate that risk through all these measures. Do you think in terms like that?
Absolutely. And that's why, like, going through different patients that have been to the ER, what's our most common patients and, like, what can we do to help prevent this? One of our previous ER doctors made the comment, prevention is cure. And that's so true. Like, preventing the injury before it happens and teaching people how to be safe and how to prevent getting hurt and prevent coming to see us. Not that we don't want to see you, but...
Yeah, yeah, but it's, you know...
Yeah, we don't want to see you there.
I'd love to see you pop in, say hi, but it's a hospital.
Yeah.
So now you brought with you a bowl of names. What are those?
So I'll backtrack a little bit. When I do Third Thursday events, I do a different safety topic every time. So we've done water safety and given out life jackets. We've done bicycle safety and given out helmets. We did stop the bleed training and first aid, basic first aid training. We have done pedestrian safety. There's all sorts of fun themes that I've picked relevant to our community, relevant to our youth. And we're able to give out so many great things, and we can do all that through the foundation. They have given us the funding to do that, which is so amazing. Most recently, we did seatbelt safety. So obviously, at a certain age, your parents make you wear a seatbelt. But as you get older, kids kind of get away from that. Even adults, we're all guilty. But
Wyoming is the worst state.
Yes.
Did you know that?
I didn't. I did not know that.
Wyoming is the worst state for seatbelt safety.
Oh, that's terrible.
I speak with Captain Eric Jorgensen on this quite a bit. He's got numbers that would just make you shake your head.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. And looking at, like, the statistics for likelihood of survival or more severe injuries not wearing your seatbelt, it's like 50% mortality increases if you don't wear your seatbelt. You're more likely to be ejected. You're more likely to have serious injuries from bouncing around the car. So it's such a simple measure to literally save your life. So we wanted to promote seatbelt safety. We have done this topic before, but we also want to make it exciting. Some of the things we teach aren't that fun, so we want to make it exciting. We partnered with a police station and had some of their officers come and do the seatbelt convincer. The kids always love that. So they get to kind of experience impact at a lower speed, but with your seatbelt on. So that was a fun part. And then we always give away different things. So one of the nurses I work closely with made these really cool stickers that said, never drive faster than your guardian angel can fly. And it has like our SMA chart, which we gave out. I actually had my children handing them out. People didn't have an option not to take them. They were given a sticker.
Great tactic, Mom. Great tactic.
And then we had keychains that said, buckle up, you are loved. That's such a good reminder. Like, it's not just about you.
Yeah.
Like, people love you and they want you safe. We had a banner made that people could sign saying, I pledge to wear my seatbelt. If you did that, you were entered into a drawing to win one of three iPads. And of course, that got everybody excited. They're like, of course, I'll wear it. And I'm like, okay, but you're promising if you sign this, you have to wear your seatbelt. And it's funny because even my dad, he has his seatbelt buckled in before he even gets in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, you cannot, like, you have to wear your, and he called me the other day. He's like, I'm wearing my seatbelt. So it's like, it's fun to get people excited about being safe.
You're
going to
draw me some names there?
I actually don't want to draw because I know a lot of people that entered. I would like one of you guys to draw. And so we get to draw three names.
I get, you're telling me, Kelly.
Okay. Like you draw.
I'll do it. I'll do
Floyd's
it.
Floyd's drawing.
Right, here we go. I'm going to go to the middle of the pile. Not
one of
looking.
Three iPads. Here we go.
Here we go. I'm going to have you read the name.
Okay. Anderson Brinkerhoff.
There we go. And?
Thanks, Floyd. Rena Glasgow. And Tessa Ligursky.
There you go. What did they just win?
So they just won brand new iPad 11s. So I'll be calling them today to come pick them up.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you for letting me be a part of that, ladies. That was really cool. On that, I do have to take another quick commercial break. More with our Sheridan Memorial Hospital right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. We're having a couple laughs in here. Proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning, we are laughing with Sheridan Memorial Hospital Director of Patient Experience, Kelly Lieb, and Trauma Coordinator, Tony Schoonover. We're talking about community involvement and patient experience out at Sheridan Memorial Hospital. Now, does Sheridan Memorial Hospital have or plan to establish a patient and family advisory council to formally include patients and their family members in these discussions around care and around various operations?
Thank you, Floyd.
That's a long question.
It's a great question. We don't currently. We have teams working around best practices for a patient family advisory council at this time. And we are looking forward to celebrate our first council meeting, hopefully this fall.
So it is being pro.
It is. It's starting. Yeah, we are now, here.
What really spurred this action, Kelly?
Well, you know, there's a couple of answers to that. First of all, best practices around how we shape and organize the patient experience at Sheridan Memorial. Best practices tell us that patients and families should definitely be involved. We have asked for that feedback through surveys and through patient satisfaction, right? And we take all of that, and that is data to us, and that tells us a lot of trends. But specific leaders in the community who want to have a say around their experience or their family's experience and how we shape healthcare in the community is the next direction, and that's through a patient family advisory council. Believe it or not, we really don't want to call it a PFAC, patient family advisory council. That sounds pretty
official.
And for what it is, right? What we really want to do is include families, frontline staff members at Sheridan Memorial Hospital would be involved on this council, families and patients who receive care at Sheridan Memorial Hospital. And what we're going to call it is actually the voice, where our team members have a voice. And that stands for, and we were talking about this word earlier on break, collaboration, but the voice stands for voicing opportunities for improvement, collaboration, and engagement.
Oh, it's an acronym too. How cool is that?
Yeah. So we're hoping to provide our frontline teams and patients and families a voice in how we establish and shape patient experience at the hospital.
Kelly, you said currently, you know, you're taking surveys, trying to get as much feedback as possible. And as you said, that is data, but it's checking the box. It's a yes or no. So how many surveys have you put out in your position?
Well, you know, Floyd, it's really interesting. We have about a third response rate, so 33% response rate across the board from inpatient medicine to outpatient medicine. And quarterly, we put out or we see up to 40,000 encounters at the hospital. Now, that could include a lab draw or a radiology exam, right?
Quick in and out.
Quick in and out. So we receive quite a few surveys throughout the year. And then we take all of that, look at the data, give ourselves some scores, right? It's kind of a nice way to grade us. But at the end of the day, it doesn't tell us enough, right? We still want to know how to provide a unique experience. How can we listen better? What did it feel like to go through the system of care? And what was that journey like for patients and families? In that, we hope to identify better quality, safety, you know, even on some of the growth we have up at the hospital around different places like the behavioral health unit.
A lot
right?
of things have changed.
A lot of things recently. Happening. And to have a family member or a patient and family member on that council to tell us what their experience was like, we hope that that can help integrate some of the decisions we make up at the hospital.
You know, I know Sheridan Memorial Hospital hasn't exactly been stagnant at all.
no.
But it's just, I feel like over the past maybe 4 or 5 years since I've been involved here at Sheridan Media, I have seen amazing developments, amazing growth. And I was here during the dark days of COVID when all of a sudden everything kind of got put on hold. Not just in the community, but at the hospital as well. We've got a change of focus. And so maybe that's why I've got that perception. Because when I arrived, everything was focused on one thing. You know, we had to devote time, energy, resources to something that none of us had ever had to deal with before. But since that time, I feel like somebody spurred the horse. There's been a lot happening up there. A lot of changes, a lot of developments, a lot of construction. Has the community given you feedback in regard to that itself, all the change happening relatively quickly?
Yes, I think informally, right? We receive feedback through the foundation. We receive feedback in our visits with our patients. We receive feedback through administration. And lots of times through the surveys, there's always an opportunity to tell us what they think is happening and how they perceive what is happening. But we haven't had a formal sort of organized, an avenue to receive this information in a collective environment that's not another place to air a grievance, right? We have a process for that.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be involved with people who want to continue to see Shared Memorial do well, but then provide very collaborative and honest feedback on how we can do that. We think in terms of healthcare, right? Tony and I are trained professionals in healthcare. Administration, all of us, we have sort of our idea of how things should be. And those are really trained, excellent perspectives. But to bring in a family member or to bring in a patient to tell us, hey, this is what this feels like. And again, frontline teams as well. This is what this feels like. We really want to have that opinion as we continue to grow and as we continue to provide safe and quality practices.
Because there might be things going on behind the scenes I as a patient don't see. And I don't understand why they will not let me ABC.
Right.
I don't get it. So maybe that's a frustration where I bring that grievance and I'm just like, you know, could you involve me more or could you describe this process more? And then all of a sudden that goes away. And now I understand the processes and things that are happening behind the scenes. Not only that, but maybe I could say, you know, I got a suggestion. Maybe we add that to the briefing going forward or whatever. Like that kind of criticism, right?
Absolutely.
Where it improves everybody. It improves how I feel about the hospital, and it's just a quick addition. Maybe something that my healthcare professionals didn't see, and not for lack of patient care, just like, oh, well, I didn't know you wanted to know that. I'll gladly tell it to you. Small things like that. Now, in what ways could a council like this enhance the work already being done in this?
Absolutely. I think it goes back to having that involvement of the patient and the family when this is happening to them, right? And we have a community of folks who are undergoing similar things across the board, right? Aging population, behavioral health, digital friendly world around electronic medical records and the portal, right? All of these different themes and how that impacts a patient and their family. They'll be able to have somewhat of a say, and then we take that as the voice, right, to our council, and then hopefully we can see some changes, or not even that they need to be made, but as we advance, that perspective is taken into consideration.
Yeah, yeah. At least the perspective is, that, well, they're feeling this way, and they're the ones we care for, so let's address it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to folks getting involved, what qualities or perspectives would the hospital look for in a patient and family advisors to participate in this council?
Awesome, thanks. Hopefully looking for people who have a story to tell, who understand what it feels like to go through the care. Also those who, and it's not often that none of us have bought this car, right? Who hasn't been to the hospital or had a family member there. So our community is wonderful and we're reaching out to those who want to be open, honest, and also provide a collaborative and improvement-based perspective on how we can continuously improve.
How can they get involved?
Great, thank you. Yeah, you can complete your application at sheridanhospital.org/voice. SheridanMemorialHospital.org/voice.
All right, now, when do we have a timeline, Kelly, on when this council is going to be formed, where it's going to meet, and has it technically been formed? Have people been approached? Hey, you want to be on this council? Are you thinking about it?
We have a broadcast of a net out there now for anyone to apply. We have a great application base so far, and we'll start. We really want to have about 8 to 25 people, and we have quite a few applications already. So we'll be looking at that and interviewing in August with hopes to start having a council starting in September or October of this year.
Oh, wow. That's a lot sooner
than I
thought
it would
be. A lot
of people have been working hard.
How long have you guys been sitting back and really looking at this?
We've been planning and looking at best practices and how places like the Beryl Institute or Cleveland Clinic, some of these really incredible institutions, manage a patient, family, and advisory council. And we've been looking at that probably well, for over the course of the last 6 to 12 months. And we really want to go about it in a great way. Instead of forcing that together, we want to make sure we've been intentional about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm here today, to tell you about that and hopefully let the community know that we are searching for those individuals who want to help make a difference.
Kelly, if there was one thing that you would like folks to know, either about Sheridan Memorial Hospital, about The Voice, about yourself, about best practices, what would that be?
That we want to care for the community, but we also want to partner with the patients and their families and how we do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to definitely be there, but we want to hear from you. We want you to be heard, and we want to make improvements across the board so that we can continue to care for Sheridan.
What about you, Tony? So basically anything about Sheridan Memorial Hospital, about preventative medicine, about best practices, what would you like the community to know?
I think, like I said, with our community outreach and why that's important, it's just like, we are people just like you and we do care. We all have bad days. I think for me, it's important to remember, like, I go here and this is my job. Well, this is not a good day for you. So just like being there for you in your vulnerable moments. But we do care about our community.
Where's the next place you're going to be for your community outreach?
So we are planning on doing the next September 3rd Thursday, and we're doing like bicycle and motorized scooter safety, because I've seen a lot more of those injuries in the ER, and it's been, you know, even some of our recent ones, such a significant difference wearing your helmet versus not. So,
yeah, I think that's fantastic. Something else that a very large majority of us kind of skip when we do that.
I know. So
I will admit, when I jump on a bike, and it's been years, ladies, I wasn't a big helmet wearer. So, yeah, folks, we got to get better at that as well. Ladies, I want to thank you so much for coming in here, speaking with me this morning. Tony, it was great to meet you. Kelly, it's fantastic to see you again. You are both welcome back anytime.
Thanks for having us.
Floyd, thanks for having us.
All right, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE. And 103.9 FM, Sheridan.